This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Homeowners in many parts of Ohio are seeing significant spikes in their property tax bills. State lawmakers have proposed more than a dozen bills to provide relief through a variety of strategies. But will any of those proposals become law before the end of the year? Today, we're going to talk with two state lawmakers about the bills being proposed and whether any of them could provide relief in the months ahead. Joining me now are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing. Welcome back, Senator Blessing.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. And Ohio State Representative Dunny Isaacson. Thanks for being with us today, Representative Isaacson.
Thanks, Lucy. Really excited to be here.
Senator Blessing, I want to start with you. We've talked several times on this program about increases in property valuations and tax bills. So many Ohio homeowners are seeing and worrying about these. What are you hearing from constituents?
So the same thing that, you are probably hearing, that there's a lot of complaints about, hey, you know, the property taxes went through the roof. Why is this happening? I don't feel that the value of my house, went up as much as the auditor says it did, as well as, you know, what is the state doing? From the perspective of seniors, they're like, well, we're on a fixed income. This, you know, these increases could push us out of our home. As well as a number of folks who are lower and middle income who, you know, say the same thing, that, you know, these property taxes are too much. Even if they're renting, a lot of times that rent is passed on, which increases their rent. And, you know, they are finding housing more untenable. So the complaints and the intensity of those complaints are definitely there. And frankly, between this and the housing issues, because they're intimately intertwined, is the number one focus for me.
Representative Isaacson, what are you hearing? And do you think there are certain constituencies, Senator Blessing just mentioned older homeowners, who have the most potential to be significantly negatively affected by these big increases?
Well, I definitely echo what the senator was just saying. This has been something that, you know, I haven't just heard about this from my constituents. I have gotten inundated ever since last year when I introduced a property tax freeze bill for seniors from people all over the state asking me, what's happening with this? Has it gone into effect yet? You know, because they are so desperate for help, for some sort of assistance, because they just were not prepared and are not prepared for such a dramatic increase in their property taxes. And it's not just Hamilton County. We're seeing it in every county that is having their reassessments done. And people they're worried. Some of them are worried about staying in their homes. They're, you know, going to be taxed out of their homes. And just think about that for a second. It is outrageous that the government would contribute to taxing people out of their homes. I just want to share, because I think you'll be interested in it, one particularly evocative and I think emblematic email I got from a couple. So they're both over 70, living on Social Security. Their payments went from $350 per year in taxes to over $1,200. He is a stage 4 cancer patient, and his wife is recovering from breast cancer. And in the last 2 years, out of pocket, they paid more than $10,000 in medical expenses. And they said they are barely getting by. And we will not have the money to pay our taxes, and we're going to lose our home. And now, thankfully, I was able to work with the treasurer and the auditor to find them some assistance for that emergency situation. But their situation is not unique. You know, there are not just seniors, but seniors especially, but people all over the county and all over the state who are worried about how they're going to make ends meet with these new property taxes. Mm-hmm.
Just a heartbreaking story. We're talking about some of the legislation that's been proposed to address Ohio's rising property tax bills. Do you have questions about property taxes or about some of these proposed legislative solutions that we're going to talk about? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Senator Blessing, state lawmakers have known for a while that these property tax valuations could be a problem. I know lawmakers formed the Joint Committee on Property Tax Review and Reform to address it. You're the Senate co-chair of that joint committee. What are the big issues that you've identified with that work?
So the biggest issue, is, and I think it takes some nuance to understand, but a lot of what dictates how property taxes and valuations work is found in the Ohio Constitution. So it's very difficult to try to do legislation that says we're going to, you know, freeze this particular class of taxpayers' property taxes. It would arguably be unconstitutional to say we're going to cap the increases to 3%, 4%, 5% per year. So, you know, that is a challenge for all of this. And that became abundantly clear through the work of that study committee. And frankly, the way that I'm viewing it now is that a lot of the proposals, you know, out there suggest shifting local money around. Well, myself and my colleague, Rep. Isaacson, you know, would, I think we'd agree that, you know, that's not really a great fix either, because it pulls money away from schools, counties, cities, you name it. That said, I think the three proposals that make the most sense, and by the way, these are all state funded, and then they would be, if we were to pass them today, that appropriation would be immediate, are one, that modified homestead exemption that's found in House Bill 187. So think of it as going up and out in the sense that it boosts the homestead exemption credit to a little over $30,000. It increases with inflation from its current value. But it also adds higher income thresholds. So before, you could only get it if you were below $36,000. You'd get nothing if you were beyond that. Now it has this progressively lower stair-stepping, such that if you were making $60,000, you might get the benefit of, say, $15,000 off the valuation of your house. So that, I think, is one excellent proposal. That is actually the closest to being across the finish line. The House has passed 187 already. So is the Senate, just waiting on, you know, whether the House concurs or decides to send it to conference. Second piece of legislation, which I think is the gold standard, is the property tax circuit breaker legislation, Senate Bill 271. I introduced that with Senator Herschel Craig, Columbus Democratic senator. And what that does is, for the first time in Ohio, it ties ability to pay property taxes to income. And the best way to think about this is that, you know, you have a circuit breaker of 5%. If you start paying property taxes that's above 5% of your income, the circuit breaks. In other words, the state starts picking up the tab up to a limit, and there are thresholds in there such that, you know, you can't have a $4 million home and expect to get that, nor can you get it if you have a salary above $60,000. But it also can benefit renters too, not just as a property tax credit, but since they don't own property, they would get a refundable income tax credit on that, with the logic that 15% of your rent is passed on property taxes. So renters would get a benefit in this too. And I might add that Senate Bill 271 and House Bill 187 could work concurrently, such that there are some lower income seniors that would see benefits from both of them. The final program or piece of legislation is the property tax deferral. And the idea of this is that it's kind of like a state-funded reverse mortgage program, in the sense that if you can't pay your property taxes now, the state picks up the property taxes you would have otherwise paid up to a certain point. And then when you either pass away or sell the home, it is taken out of the equity in the home at that point. So that way, you know, you're able to tap into that equity early on. But since it's a state-funded program, you're able to have a more robust oversight on a program like that. But in addition, I think the cost of such a program like that would be relatively low, in the sense that you'd need some seed money, but after a while, money is flowing in and flowing back to it as the state recoups its money on that. And there are other states that have that legislation in place. Maine and Minnesota, for example. But the things to keep in mind in order for successful property tax reform, as far as I'm concerned, is one, it needs to be state funded. I'm adamant about that because it an appropriation can be in effect immediately. You don't run into constitutional issues. Schools and local governments aren't impacted. All of these things need to be in place for that. Two, it absolutely must be means tested. And part of this is that, you know, one, we're trying to target the people most in need. But two, if you do a broad-based reform where you're dumping a lot of money into you know, entities that don't necessarily need it, it can actually become inflationary in the sense that it acts like an interest rate cut at the federal level and would actually push home prices further, actually making the problem potentially worse. So those are some things to keep in mind with this. And I think that's, at least from where I'm coming from, the best approach we have.
What do you think, Representative Isaacson? I know you've got another approach you've been pushing. What do you think about that, these three that Senator Blessing just referenced?
So as usual, Senator Blessing and I are usually pretty aligned on a lot of these issues, and that continues to be true today. In fact, I introduced just last week companion legislation to the property tax circuit breaker bill, but with a slightly higher income threshold in a bipartisan bill in the House, and similarly introduced a bipartisan bill last year that would freeze property taxes for seniors over 65. But here's the piece I want to make very clear as it relates to state policy. Relying so heavily on local property taxes to fund our systems of government is a choice that we make. We had an $8 billion surplus in the last state budget, and we decided to blow it in large part on income tax cuts for the wealthiest people in the state that no one asked for, and frankly, were not needed, that are on an ongoing basis, so we don't get that income back, and over $1 billion in subsidizing private school vouchers so that anyone in the state, including millionaires and billionaires, can use state dollars to send their kids to private schools. What we should have done is shift the property tax burden away from individual homeowners. Instead, we've gone in the opposite direction. Every time we introduce new loopholes for corporations and LLCs, every time we shift revenue away from income taxes on the highest earners and on corporations, we are just adding to the burden that we are placing on low and moderate income homeowners. And so having our property taxes play this role in the overall government ecosystem is a policy choice we are making. And we have the resources, or could have the resources, to make a very different choice. Our property taxes, as they function right now, are a deeply regressive system. In some ways, it's more regressive, which means that, you know, it's not based on your ability to pay, than even the sales tax. And it's actually targeted more and more, and we see it in these increases, in neighborhoods that are more diverse, in neighborhoods with low and moderate income and working class people. And so these increases are not distributed evenly, and our tax system overall is not distributed equitably. And so I just want to be clear that, yes, I support all of these proposals. We should have, you know, the circuit breaker, I agree, is sort of the gold standard and would go a really long way towards alleviating these concerns. But we also need to take a more fundamental look at the choices we are making about who we are asking to fund our government and pay for our basic services.
We do have a caller on the line. Hey, John, thanks for your patience. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I'm a retired 69-year-old, and my property taxes have doubled. And I'd just like to commend you guys for at least even doing anything about it. I mean, at least you're talking about it. And because these other guys, all they want to do is pass another ridiculous bathroom bill. I mean, come on. We're citizens are really suffering with this. So I commend you two guys for working on that. Thank you.
Thank you, John. We appreciate that call. We are going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, have you noticed some local pharmacies closing? We'll dig into the numbers. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the soaring property tax bills that so many Ohio homeowners are facing and the legislative solutions that state lawmakers have proposed. My guests are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing and Ohio State Representative Dunny Isaacson. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Before we took that break, Representative Isaacson, you were talking about the potential for more systemic reform when it comes to property taxes. We did get an email from a listener who asks, in this time of dramatically increased property tax bills, why hasn't the General Assembly repealed and replaced the unconstitutional school funding scheme in Ohio? It's only been, what, almost three decades. I'm curious to hear how not fixing school funding somehow squares with passing relatively minor tax breaks and major corporate subsidies, not to mention a certain utility company's bailout. Senator Blessing, what do you think about that?
So for one, we do have a constitutional school funding formula now. We did pass the Fair School Funding Formula back in 2021, and it's currently being phased in as we speak and should be entirely phased in this coming budget cycle. And I will tell you, school treasurers, even the author of that Fair School Funding Plan, Mike Sobel, have argued that it is constitutional. But that having been said, look, I do agree that we should be pouring more money into our schools. And I'm glad that this was asked, because I wanted to piggyback on what Representative Isaacson said with respect to, you know, the tax expenditure list, which now is, I want to say, I'm reasonably certain it's over $12 billion. At this point, and what that is that's a list of what the state spends money on in terms of, you know, the various carve outs in the sales, income, CAT, various other tax groups. And that was one of the criticisms of the property tax circuit breaker, which, well, this costs $800 million per fiscal year to the state. How are you guys going to pay for it? And my response that I made in testimony was, well, quite simple. We have in Ohio what is known as the business income deduction. And that is the first $250,000 of income is tax-free. Beyond that $250,000 is a flat 3% rate. And when you combine those two, the cost to the state is about $1.2 billion per fiscal year. Now, in Ohio, we often talk about, well, this program created jobs, that program created jobs. There is no guardrail like that on the business income deduction. And so by simply saying that the owners have to materially participate in the business, and there are federal rules on what that means, so you have to actually be actively participating in the business, and you have to hire at least one employee in order to get this business income deduction. I would point out that such logic is not unknown in this country. The state of Oregon has a similar guardrail on their business income deduction. That cuts it in half, saving the state $600 million per fiscal year. That could easily be plowed into this property tax circuit breaker, knocking down the cost from $800 million per fiscal year down to about $2 million. But beyond that, there are other things like the sales tax exemption for data centers that have been criticized a lot in recent news media. I believe the Ohio Capital Journal put something out about that recently. That's over $100 million per fiscal year for these data centers that really don't create a lot of jobs. And these sales tax exemptions are going to companies like Amazon and Meta, Google, or I should say Alphabet, all of which have the means to pay for these things on their own. And so now you're at another $100 million. So now the cost of this program is only $100 million per fiscal year. And frankly, there are other expenditures in there that could very easily make this up. And frankly, I have tried this past budget cycle, that business income deduction form piece I put in place. Unfortunately, it wasn't accepted, but You know, look, I'd have to echo my colleague's comments here. It is a policy choice. And, you know, I know what I want to get done. And my colleague knows what he wants to get done with this, too. I think we are very much aligned. It's just, can we get our colleagues on board with it? But I do think, given the discussion on property taxes, that certainly the homestead exemption piece can get done this GA. I'm hopeful that the property tax circuit breaker can as well, with the caveat that, hey, look, we get rid of some of these expenditures and now it is a revenue neutral program, which I think is excellent.
Yeah. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Lee, what was your question?
So I'm just curious as to why the tax goes up based on, you know, the value of a house that's sold up the street or down the street or whatever, as opposed to going up, you know, in sequence with the general inflation. So inflation goes up 3 or 4%, then that's not that much of a jump for people, but a 100% jump in their tax bill seems, you know, just ridiculous on its face.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Thank you. Representative Isaacson, I imagine you've heard that from people. Is that is how these taxes are calculated? Is that a constitutional piece of this too?
Well, so there was a lot in there, but the two main pieces here is your home gets assessed. So its value is assessed at the local level by the auditor's office. And then the tax rate is a result of, you know, various levies and local taxes. And so what the state actually has a role in creating both the assessment structure, if we wanted to, and what the tax rate could be, or what Senator Blessing and I are really talking about, which is what to do on the back end in terms of providing rebates or credits or limiting the increases based on a percentage of income. But there is that first issue, which is how are the values being assessed in the first place, which really is what Lee is getting at. And there is room for reform on both sides of this equation, without a doubt. And I want to just get back to one of the things that we touched on earlier, which is, you know, where what the senator was talking about with these tax deductions and the tax expenditures. So often the discussion in Columbus, and I hear it all the time in the tax committee, Ways and Means, is, well, we need this tax cut or this tax credit or this deduction to help these businesses. And, you know, once we help the businesses, everything else will be good. And the question I always ask in those committees is, you know, what is the ultimate goal of these tax policies? Helping businesses in and of itself is not our job. Our job is to represent and work for the people of Ohio. Now, I'm a small business owner. There's all sorts of ways in which helping businesses can help people. It can lead to better schools. It can lead to, you know, better basic services. It can lead to lower taxes if we're generating more revenues. But we have to make that choice. We have to link those things. And what we've done actually instead is de-link them. We've said, we're going to give all these corporate giveaways. We're going to give all these tax breaks to the wealthiest people in Ohio and corporations and LLCs. And we're not going to link it to anything and related to people's day-to-day lives. We're not going to make sure it leads to childcare being more affordable or housing being more accessible or our public schools, you know, making sure that kids can read at grade level or do complicated math, all of the things that matter to quality of life. And so fundamentally, we need to get back to linking the work that government is doing, the taxes we are raising, people's hard-earned money, to actually going into programs and services that will help people's lives in their day-to-day existence. And school is core to that, rather than just saying every tax cut for every business and every wealthy person is inherently positive.
We got an email from Elaine. Elaine writes, will there be any relief for moderate income people who are over $69,000 a year? In this case, earners with children in public schools. Will this be the beginning of the exodus of moderate income earners from owning homes in cities in Ohio? Does the legislature, made up of mostly suburban and rural representatives, care about the cities? Representative Isaacson, I think you mentioned that in your companion circuit breaker legislation, you had a higher income threshold than the $60,000 that Senator Blessing mentioned.
Yeah, as introduced, ours would, in a graduated way, go up to people earning up to $100,000. And this is in state taxable income. So it's actually, functionally, it's a little bit of a higher threshold because not all income is state tax, considered state taxable income. But yeah, ours would, the bill I introduced with Representative Hall would take it all the way up to 100.
Senator Blessing, you referenced this before, but what chance do you think any of these measures, what chance do you think there is that any of these measures could be passed by both chambers before the end of this year? Because the end of this year is the end of this General Assembly, right? I mean, if they don't pass before the end of the year, it has to start all over in January, if I understand correctly.
Yes, that's correct. Like I said, I think the modified homestead exemption is likely to pass because that is the closest to the finish line. And I think that can get done before the end of the year. The property tax circuit breaker and some of these other proposals, given that they're so early on, I mean, Senate Bill 271 is, you know, has only had two hearings. And again, it was kind of having hearings at the same time as the Property Tax Review and Reform Committee was doing its work. So, I mean, it could be tough, but frankly, it you know, making this revenue neutral, I'd like to think sweetens the pot and makes it easier for some of my colleagues to, excuse me, get behind it. So I certainly believe that the homestead exemption piece can get done. Property tax circuit breaker, maybe not, but I do think come budget time, there's a lot more people talking about property taxes right now than there are income taxes. I'm confident there will be some reform in the next budget cycle at a minimum.
Well, I've been talking with Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing and Ohio State Representative Donny Isaacson. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, have you noticed some neighborhood pharmacies closing? We'll dig into the numbers. This is Cincinnati Edition.